Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
I'm KC.
And I'm Joe Oklahoma Jones.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is happening, all you woods people? Guess what? The woods are coming alive outside. I heard a turkey strut. And you might have said, hey, you know what? That actually is not a sound. That's an action, but you can hear it a little bit. Because you go...
You know what?
What?
We have a video that released recently that you can hear that. Because it's so quiet and there's no wind. And you can hear the wingtips in a strut touching the rocks every time
dude,
he struts.
How cool is that?
It is.
That is pretty slick, man.
Yep.
That's that video is on YouTube right now. And it's called, like... Awesome Turkey Hunt Missouri or Insane Turkey
Unbelievable.
Hunt. Unbelievable.
Because it really is.
It is unbelievable.
You have
There's
to
a
see
giant
it to
trout,
believe it.
A big old turkey. And some dudes actually wearing some First Light gear.
Oh,
in
my
that.
Goodness.
Yeah. And apparently, I don't know if y'all know this, but it's like against the feng shui to wear First Light when you're turkey hunting, according to the old, you know, the what would it say? Like the 17th Legion or something like that.
Don't bring me into
this. Let me tell you something. It works pretty good. It's about the best looking stuff, the Spectre at least, for all around just being on the ground, being in a tree or wherever. So if you're needing to gear up a little bit before turkey season, go hit up firstlight.com and get you some stuff. Today on the podcast, we have got a 4/5 compromise. Eric is not here, but Michael and Greg are. Greg, we missed you last week. Did you get your internet in?
I did. I got my internet up and going at the RV.
So all right, man. What's your megabyte per second right now?
I don't know, but it's pretty fast.
Yeah, that's good. Cool. Yeah. All right, man. Congratulations. Well,
yes, very much congratulations.
I would like to have some internet at my house, maybe one of these days. They keep telling me I need like a 90-foot tower, and I just refuse. I'm not doing it. So
refuse.
Hot spots it is, I suppose.
Greg's from Houston.
Is he?
Houston, Texas.
That's it.
Population 2.3 million, according to Wikipedia.
Did you just find Wikipedia or something?
That's just the city limit.
Wow.
Yeah,
so there's like 6 or 7 million.
Yeah, that's the biggest city limit in the state, though.
There's actually like a billion. I think.
Yeah. Because Dallas is 1.8, I believe.
I don't know. Let's look that up.
We do this on road trips a lot because we travel a lot, as y'all know. So, like, it's always interesting to look up just some factual knowledge, you know. You never know when you got another trivia to do or something. So it's good to know some stuff about your state. I think San Antonio is surprisingly low, if I remember, because its city limits is not all that big.
You don't want to go to the city limits of San Antonio, by the way. 1.3 is what Dallas is.
Yeah, yeah. Quite a bit smaller.
That's it. Like, San Antonio is like 7th largest in the nation.
Yeah, it's huge. The greater San Antonio area, which DFW is, I think, bigger than that.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley loves San Antonio, from what I understand.
Yeah. So apparently there's like some some like ratio that he goes by. You're supposed to find five small somethings or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not sure about that. I can't remember.
It's kind of hard to do, though, from what I hear.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's fact or fiction, though, Tyler. You know, you never know what Chuck's going to say.
Man, you just don't.
The same thing happens in the hunting world. You never know what Michael's going to say. And you never know if it's going to be fact or fiction. You never know if he's going to say words truth. Or just make animal sounds.
Yep.
Michael has a dog bark that he likes to do that actually is it's more of a
seal.
If you've ever
walrus,
heard
walrus,
a American bittern, it's what that sounds like.
I haven't.
When they have their spring call, it's a guttural like they do it kind of more from their gizzard than they do from like
feel like a, it's how a grouse throws that little breast down or whatever that thing is.
They're little bubbles they got, you know. He's lecking. That's what he's doing whenever he makes that noise. So
you were just throwing words that I don't know if they're real or not.
Oh, I don't ever.
It looks
speak
like leaking, but it's legging.
Yeah, I speak the facts, man.
No,
yeah,
you
do.
Don't.
I do. I promise.
He's just having to withhold more of his facts these
since
days.
Ooh. Michael is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right, man. Mm-hmm. That's right.
We don't need to go down that road.
The beginning of knowledge. Does anybody know where it comes from? Maybe one day.
Proverbs 1:7.
Proverbs 1:7. That's it. Yeah.
Fear of the Lord.
That's it. Michael, you're a fearsome guy.
Something like that.
You have compiled a listing for us.
Yep.
That we may add to, but for
what's
now,
happening?
You've got some things that we need to discuss. We're going to do things a little different today, okay?
Wow.
What is going on?
I can't
guys?
Understand. I'm trying to get. Talking? I'm trying to put some story stuff up on our Instagram.
Yeah.
At the Element Wild.
That's a good plug.
There you go. There you go.
It wasn't the best. But.
Yeah. So today we're going to explore concepts in the hunting world, not just limited to whitetail, but also maybe some Western stuff, some bird stuff as well, that we need to discuss if we believe they are fact or fiction. And we're going to try to not be too controversial. But I guarantee you we are, because it's in our nature. But we're not going to dog on anybody too much. It's going to be more of like thoughts, wives' tales, idioms, things that you hear.
What'd you call me?
Huh?
What'd you call me?
You know. things that you hear kind of as what is considered common knowledge sometimes in the woods that may or may not be true. So, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
You have a heavy hitter for us to start with.
I think where we should start is the scent control.
Oh
topic.
My goodness!
Ooh,
we weren't supposed to be making people mad.
Eyes direct off towards Greg.
Oh yes, Greg.
Greg made some outlandish statements a while ago.
Outlandish statements.
So the concept is we're going to go around the room counterclockwise, so that. Michael has to finish this time. I want him to be the last guy to talk. And we're going to state and rebuke or confirm what the other person says. And we're also going to state if we think it's fact or fiction. So, Greg, we'll stop talking. You tell me, or Michael, I suppose, scent control, fact or fiction, and support your belief.
I believe the only scent control that you can do is whichever way the wind's blowing.
Y'all email Greg at theelement.com.
That's an old Queen line, isn't it? Anywhere the wind blows.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. But I don't care how much scent control you do, how much clothes washing you do. Like, the deer's going to smell your breath. They're going to smell your sweat. Like, there's nothing you can do besides control where your wind is blowing.
Do you wash your clothes at all?
Yes.
Good. Do you wash your clothes in whatever, or do you stray away from the really flowery stuff?
This past year, I washed them in whatever.
Yeah.
It's because he was home with us.
Like, I think I used Downy.
Ooh.
That or Gain, I forget which one I had, but
yeah, Gain of Function.
No Tide Pods.
Yeah. So it is, in your opinion, fiction scent control?
I think there's maybe something to like spraying your boots mm-hmm. on like public on private ground mm-hmm. if you're trying to, you know, limit your scent trail going in and out. Mm-hmm. But if you're on public, I mean, you have no clue if a dude's been walking through there with gasoline on his shoes. Mm-hmm. Like scent control is on public is, I think, kind of dumb.
Interesting. Wow, how controversial of you, Greg.
Oh, yeah.
I am going to go a different way so as to have some variance in this podcast. I'm going to say scent control is fat because of two things. I think that what people call scent control is actually scent elimination, and that is fiction.
Yeah.
Scent control, however, would be doing things to mitigate your scent's impact on the deer. Just like what you were saying, so I do agree with you, but, you know, just to kind of throw a wrench in it, Tyler and I learned January 1st, 2018, that if you set your backpack down on the ground and try to decide what tree you're going to sit in, the deer will come there, smell that thing, and not come any closer. Oh, ground yeah. scent is huge, and controlling oh, how yeah. much ground scent you have on the ground is, like, imperative oftentimes.
Oh, yeah. I have no disagreement on, like, yeah. ground scent is 100% a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I've sprayed my boots, done all this stuff, walked a trail, and had a deer walk straight to that trail and just stop mm-hmm. and hang up.
Let me tell you another story that is, this is where things get anecdotal. Tyler and I were hunting some Texas public a few years back, and one of us had the urge. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Tyler. And climbed down, went and used the bathroom at the place we thought the deer wouldn't come from. 30 minutes later, that's the direction the deer come from. They walk right past the human scat and don't pay it no mind and never act like anything happened at all. So there's just so many factors mm-hmm. that it's hard to even figure out what they are and what they aren't going to mess with. So I agree that you cannot control much except for where your scent ends up, wind, ground, whatever it might be. Tyler?
I think that potentially the less scent molecules you have floating around, the less chance one of those scent molecules goes rogue and gets way outside your normal pattern of wind. That being said, the way that we hunt does not lend itself to mm-hmm. scent control.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much cannot do scent control outside of the occasional washing of my clothes in a scent, a free product, some sort of, what's the it's not a hunting product, but it's like a scent free.
All free and clear.
All free and clear, yeah.
I like the Arm & Hammer a little bit better. My family's recently gone to like the granola version of something, you know, where it's like a healthier thing or whatever, but still scent free.
Yep. So I think that for me, it's like how few molecules can I put into the air if I get the chance to do it. But I mean, even for a lot of guys who work a lot, man, it's hard to like find the time to really just dial everything. When you got kids and stuff and you got to go to games and you got things going on, I think it's just hard to dial your system to the point that you're like, you know, really just focused on scent control. Instead, I think it's way more effective to focus on wind and approach. And ground scent is like it's been mentioned, very important. So, and especially like on public, like Greg said, he doesn't feel like it's very important. I feel like it is in the last, which he would agree with this, in the last, you know, 100 yards or so a lot of times where it's like you're in a spot that maybe people don't hunt as much in the last couple hundred yards, maybe even depending on what kind of place you're hunting. But you don't want that deer to lock up at 60 yards because it got your tracks. So I think you just got to be careful around this. Like walking down lanes and stuff that everybody else is walking down, you know, Greg's right. Like it ain't worth messing with. But once you get in there, just make sure you're taking the right trail.
Maybe I was like misunderstood, but like what I mean by like scent control is like spraying your clothes. And
yeah,
like,
yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I 100% take ground scent like serious. Like yeah, I won't yeah. walk.
No, I got the, that from you for sure.
I won't walk yeah. to the trail that
right.
I plan on hunting.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know that deer will lock up.
Yeah, that's pretty important when you're like going in hanging hunt style too. To and Tyler does a good job of this of slowing down and yeah. making sure you don't overshoot your destination.
So you're saying if you walk a circle in around the spot you're supposed to hunt, then it's not good.
Let's go.
That's probably not good.
Let's
you
go. Might,
and especially if you sit upwind of the
them's fine scrape. Words.
I'm sorry, Eric. I'm sorry when you have to edit this.
Like sometimes I'll change the spot I hunt because I walk too far. I'm like, crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I need to hunt a little bit further this way.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, in Michael's case, if you do walk a circle, just make sure you sit upwind of the scrape.
Yeah. Sit upwind of it. Yeah, that's probably where I'd sit too.
That's a joke, people. Michael, fact or fiction?
I definitely think it's fiction. Maybe you can control, like a lot of people like to picture your scent as like a cone or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can maybe make it a little smaller, but I don't think at the end of the day it's going to be enough.
The thing yeah. the dogs wear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Control. Scent control is blowing your wind in the correct direction on access and while you're in the stand, and also caring about your ground scent in the places that it can mess you up.
Yep. Those are the things that work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Like one thing on my family's property is I've left stuff out in the field mm-hmm. that I could see from with binoculars. And I'll see deer get to about 10 or 20 yards and they start sniffing around and get really weird, but they never like blew and like ran off. Mm-hmm. But I've had deer, like if they get downwind to you and I had all the scent spray on or whatever, like they're going to smell your breath.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They're going to smell you being there, and that's what alerts them.
Yeah. Michael, hit us with another one.
All right. So a lot of people talk about outworking everybody else and going a mile plus back to kill a deer. Can you kill a deer within a mile of the truck?
So you mean like a nobody cares type deal?
Yeah. Maybe like work harder.
Tyler?
Can you outwork people?
No. Do you need to go a mile back to outwork people?
Is this a yes or no question, or do I explain?
This is fact or fiction. Explain.
Fact.
Fact. You going to explain it?
Yeah. I think in the majority of the time, yes.
Okay.
And there's a guy sitting across from me. I'm not sure what he's going to say, but I know he likes to outwork people when going in a lot of times.
For a fact,
I think that if in the whitetail woods, if you get over a mile back, you are cutting a lot of the competition for sure. And if you're hunting within a half mile, you're hunting where everybody has spent time. So those are two things that are pretty much fact. That being said, I had a crazy cool hunt on a deer in Iowa. If you haven't seen it, there's incredible grunting vocalizations in this video. You can look at it. It's from 2019 season where I killed the deer. I watched the deer cross the road about 80 yards away and then shot him at 20. And, it's cool, and you can do that, and I would do that. I will do that every time. Every time I get a chance, I will hunt as close as I can feel good about hunting from the road. But I am typically, if I'm map scouting something far out, you know, away from where I live, I'm looking for places that are for sure more than a half mile most of the time.
So it's hard to make a definite answer on this, but I'm just going to say fiction because it's not the first thing that I consider. It's not even the second thing I consider. But it is in there, and it's worth it. It has merit to it. However, the deer are where they are. Take, for instance, South Dakota this year. Went way far back one evening, like a mile and a half, saw no human sign and saw no deer. A couple mornings later, shot a deer 400 yards from a parking lot. And I don't think that's a case of that's the exception, not the rule. But I do think that fairly often you can find deer that are not that far from where people go. It just has to be something that's cliche, but overlooked, and that's what we found there. It just has to add up and have all the things that you need in a good deer hunting spot. Because, and here's why I say fiction. It's because people have finally caught on. Guys like Cameron Haynes, David Goggins, Aaron Snyder, Jocko Willink, all these people preach being tough.
Oh boy.
And like going forever. And people idolize that and think it's really cool. And it does work sometimes for sure.
Yeah.
But if you look on the map,
it still doesn't make it easier to go far.
No, mm-hmm. It doesn't. But it inspires some people to do it. And if you look on the map and see something that looks really good and really far from the road, there's a good chance that there's another tryhard that's been there. Now, where there's merit is saying, I'm going to go far back in here, observe along the way, and when I find the spot I know I can kill the deer. Don't get so caught up on going the 1 mile and ignore the stuff that's a half mile in if that's the place to kill the deer. But, Greg, your turn. Yeah, I know you got some pretty good stuff here.
I mean, it's fiction. Like, I mean, you can kill deer right next to the road. If there's a food source that, like, just, like, that's where the deer are at, mm-hmm. like, that's just where they're at. But, like, on some high-pressured stuff, I've found it, if I go pretty far back, further than anybody else is going, I'm going to have consistently better hunts than if I, you know, was lazy about it and just, like, didn't go as far back.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I've had, like, quick hunts where I dip in and I'm, like, 100 yards from the road and had decent hunts.
Mm-hmm.
But I say I have better quality hunts if I mm-hmm. go further back.
So you're saying fact, right?
Well, if fact is what? What was the question? It was,
Will going a mile deep get you into better hunting?
It will get you into better hunting most of the time, but it's not mm-hmm. across the board. You know,
it's a thing. It's like one of your top things you look at, right?
Like, there's nothing worse to me. Like when I, because like I didn't before this, I only hunted the weekends,
mm-hmm.
and one of my least favorite things was not going far back and then having another dude come in on my setup.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, the only way to avoid that was like going a mile and a half mm-hmm. back, and I usually get some better hunts. Mm-hmm. Out of that.
You know what's the worst, though? It's when you go that far back and then somebody like comes in off a private and you're just like, ah!
Yeah, you got to watch out for that. People will definitely come in from the private.
Yeah. Michael?
It's my question, and I still don't even think I can give like a fact or fiction. I think it's more like a faction.
Faction.
Let's go, dude.
Yeah, because
combination words, dude. Let's go.
I think you do need to outwork people, but a lot of the times what I've seen in my little bit of hunting is outworking people can look a lot of different ways. Like you can,
it's a good point.
If there is a ginormous hill in the way, there's not a lot of big dudes that are going to go up that mm-hmm. hill. If you can cross a river, even better, because a lot of dudes aren't going to get soaking wet to go kill a deer. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know.
There's also a level to expand on that point, because I thought about that too, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
there's
go for
a level of like building up your mental library of situations, scenarios, things you know, how deer react to certain weather mm-hmm. conditions, wind conditions, all this stuff that can play into that as well. Like if you know that, hey, on a southeast wind, it's going to die at dark, then you can go in and hunt a different place than what a lot of people can. Or if you know, hey, the sun goes down at this time, if I wait until right at the last 30 minutes of daylight and go in there, the thermals will change the way the wind blows, and the deer you can sneak in on. So, like, absolutely, that's a good point, man, for sure. What's all looking up?
I don't know what this guy's typing over
here. Trying some ideas, you know?
Okay, good.
Don't worry about me.
All right. Okay. Do you have more on that? I didn't mean to take that one away from you, but I really like that. I like that point a lot.
We ready for the next one?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
This one I think we're all going to agree on, but crossbows should be in archery season.
Ooh, you answer first.
No.
Mm-mm. I answer first.
Yeah, you answer first.
KC, no, you first. Answer. KC first.
I am okay with someone who has a disability using a crossbow.
What do you mean by disability?
I mean that could be a lot of variations, but, mm-hmm. you know, the shoulder thing, I'm okay with that. But outside of that, crossbows don't belong in the hands of a normal
hunter.
So,
what about youth hunters?
Yeah. That's tough. I don't know. I don't know. It's a hard one to answer. I want to say no, but at the same time, like, I think that's a little bit of my bias coming in. And whereas, like, if it lets a kid go hunting who wouldn't otherwise, then yeah, I kind of like it. But like, now this is my personal conviction. I don't plan to start my kids on crossbows, but if that's something they want to do, I would probably allow it, but I would want to be working towards the direction of them shooting a real bow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I think. I don't think that for a normal hunter, the whole point of an archery season is for limited capability, right? Like, you're limiting yourself.
Yep.
And then if you say, oh, actually, we're going to allow this technology to make everyone feel like they can shoot 100 yards, that's defeating the purpose.
Yep.
Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Yeah, like
Greg,
There's too many dudes who are capable of pulling bows back who like to use a crossbow because
mm-hmm.
they're an opportunist.
Yeah.
and not a traditionalist.
You tend to say they have certain physical attributes, too, I believe.
Yeah, somewhat. There's a trend.
They do usually look similar.
I was thinking, what? Yeah, I realized. Yeah. Yeah. Mustaches,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So, fact or fiction, crossbows belong in archery?
I think with limitations. Physical disabilities, and because I mean, if you can't pull a bow back that's capable of killing a deer, I can see a use for it. But I just don't like people shooting deer at 100 yards with a crossbow.
Yep. Tyler,
is it my turn?
Yep, your turn.
I think that we have muzzleloaders that will shoot out to several hundred yards accurately right now. And we have a muzzleloader-specific season in most states. And I think that crossbows should have their own season. And it should not be associated with archery season.
That was going to be my next question.
Is that an overlap, or is that a...
No, well, you know, yeah, you could hunt... I mean, I think potentially you could hunt archery during crossbow season. But there should be, like, to me... The way that Western states work is usually archery season opens, then there's muzzleloader, then there's rifle. Mm-hmm. So that, like, each weapon is more effective, and so the most effective people have to deal with adverse situations a lot of times because they have weapons that'll shoot out to 1,000 yards or whatever.
In Colorado, they put muzzleloader season in the middle of archery season, but just for 1 week.
Mm.
Do you like that or dislike that?
I don't mind it. Yeah. I don't know if I like it or dislike it.
So
but
for
I don't mind
archery
it,
season, you would be okay for, like, so say in Texas, you have a month of archery, you'd be okay for a week of that being crossbow?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense to me in my mind to do 3 weeks of archery, a week of crossbow, and then rifle for 14 months or whatever it is.
You're
14.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I think I know how you and I both stand on this. Like, the concept of being able to use a lesser weapon in all seasons is also kind of a thing that I stand behind.
I mean, there's states, right, that don't allow that, and that's...
Texas is one of them.
It's dumb.
There's a muzzleloader-specific season. Yeah.
Yeah.
That you can't use a
bow.
Can't
use archery.
Yeah.
So dumb. That's weird. What is the point?
Mm-hmm. Michael?
That's lobbyist stuff for sure.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you and Greg. Like, if you can't pull a bow back, that's one thing. Probably would have a little more lenience on the kids because that is how I grew up until I was 12 or whatever.
Okay. Why did you decide to shoot a real bow?
I thought it looked cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad would probably still want me to shoot a crossbow if it was to this day, but...
Because he feels like they're more effective?
Oh, they're definitely more effective, but I don't think Steve really cares. He's just whatever you want to do, but...
Yeah.
I thought, like, when you look at somebody hunting and they're using a compound bow, that's what you want to do. It's not like, I want to go sit up in a tree stand and shoot this crossbow at a deer, so...
I feel like that... the issue with crossbows a lot of times is that the crossbow hunter is a guy that shoots a rifle that doesn't really spend much time worrying or learning about the art or craft of bow hunting and how all the different components work together. Mm-hmm. But it says here, actually, I'm looking at a Meteor article right now that says that crossbow hunters make up 50-60% of all bow hunters.
Man, it's almost like they have buying power.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy how sometimes money can
it is.
Be the way you track things?
Who wrote that article?
I don't know. Let's see. Old Dirk.
Patrick Durkin.
Yeah.
He's a crossbow hunter, I believe.
Probably.
No, I think he is.
So, yeah. Apparently, crossbow harvests match or exceed vertical bow kills.
Yeah?
Really?
Yeah.
So, you bring up an interesting point, though, and we talk about this often. Ethics are made up, right? So, and you... interjected some ethic into the take as to why crossbows don't belong in archery season.
Are you talking about the fact that they're not paying much attention to what's going on? Okay, so I don't necessarily feel personally that worried about it. I just think that's what the problem a lot of guys foresee is that like it's just a way for a guy with a rifle to you know, basically hunt longer.
Extended season,
but then not really, you know, learn and pay attention to the things that are going on there. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's almost like this may be an extreme case of this, but it's like, well, you know, if you could let me hunt during falconry season with my bow, you know, I wouldn't shoot your falcon with my bow, and so you don't have to worry about it. So just let me hunt, you know, during that. And really, it's like you're not a falconry guy if you're mm-hmm. hunting with a bow. You know yeah. what I mean? So
we're blending genres here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of people screaming right now.
That's all right.
But they'll send us messages.
Yeah, that's
don't
right.
worry.
I mean, if you hunt with a crossbow just because you like it, we're not telling you that you're a bad person.
By the way, my son, we hunted with a crossbow a few times this year. Yeah. So I'm not opposed to it at all. I just think that we shouldn't have a more effective weapon being allowed into a weaponry season that is supposed to be for less effective weapons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like if it starts getting to the point where they start limiting tags because of the effectiveness of the weapon.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, like,
they actually are doing that in some states.
Yeah,
so funny enough.
Good. Funnily.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Mike.
Next one.
Yeah.
I think we'll go to the mechanicals are junk argument. Flappers.
Flappers. You know, I don't know if I ever heard that until this year.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're first. You haven't been first yet.
That's a Yankee term, probably, huh? I would imagine.
Flappers?
Yeah.
That was made up by a Texan, actually.
Oh, you're talking about
really?
Yeah.
So that's Troy. Fairly new terminology. Then.
Sure was. I mean, I wasn't going to say his name, but yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, he made one. Term.
Cowboy Troy.
Did he?
I think.
A flapper.
Didn't they make like a $600 one or something like that?
I have no idea.
I think there's like a Ranch Ferry mechanical broadhead or something
it's
like that.
It's a dollar for every grain.
Yeah, that's right. Michael?
I definitely think it's fiction. I think what's more important with archery setup is the arrow weight. I don't think, or I guess it'd be energy, but like mm-hmm. overall, and to dumb it down, arrow weight, because the more your arrow is going to weigh, the more penetration you're going to get. You're going to kill things if you hit them in the soft spot with anything. Like, 600 grain arrow, when you see that thing fly, it looks real nice. You put a mechanical on that, you're going to kill anything in North America easy. So, I don't know. I think, yeah, definitely. That wasn't quite 600 grain, but yeah. I think people just like to get on their high horses on some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Greg? Greg?
I think some mechanicals are junk, but if you use a good one, mm-hmm. I think they can be very effective.
That's a good point.
I think whatever broadhead you have on the end of your arrow, you need to take in consideration for what kind of shots you can take.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you know, apply however the deer is facing. Like, if you're using the mechanical, just you're taking broadside and quarter away shots, and unless you
that ain't me.
feel like you're shooting a heavy enough arrow.
Yeah,
and I mean, at Texas deer, I mean, you can punch to the front shoulder, mm-hmm. but yeah, you just take into account what kind of broadhead you got. I like carrying both mechanical and field tips.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, that's where I'll...
Not fixed plates?
Yeah. So field
tips. I was waiting on you to say it.
Just wait till they turn broadhead. But,
that is a good point, though. Like, a golfer doesn't go into a match with only one club. Like,
yeah, you've...
Dang.
You got different clubs for... Every shot.
Every
you know?
Shot.
Golly. Kaylee does. Spitting over here.
Just saying.
Kaylee goes with one club.
Six iron, man. That's all you need. That's you play a whole
she's
course.
Seven iron.
Seven?
Yeah.
Well, now you guys are just debunking likes, what I said. But
likes to lob it a little bit.
Well, no, I know we're not. Because if you've seen her play golf. she's pretty good.
I do that, too, with the both thing. But the question is, fact or fiction, broadhead, mechanicals, or junk?
Yeah.
I'm going to say fiction. And here is how I come to that. I agree with Greg that some of them probably are. But at the same time, there are some fixed blades that are pretty junk too. Mm-hmm. So assuming you want to compare apples to apples, you can't say I'm going to take this cutthroat broadhead and compare that to an Amazon knockoff Rage and think they're going to be the same thing, because they're not. It's just one of them is just made out of a Pepsi can, and the other one is made out of like the kind of steel that they use to make punch dyes. You know, like it's a different thing completely. So if you just take a really high quality mechanical and compare it to a really high quality fixed, they're both going to be pretty effective if you put them in the right spot. And I, to kind of take a little bit harder stance here instead of being so mellow, I think that people really severely overemphasize the lack of penetration or whatever you want to call it, the reduced lethality of a mechanical. I think mechanicals are deadly, mm-hmm. deadly with the right setup.
Ditto.
Ditto.
Tyler, mechanicals for life. Let's go.
Dang, dude.
You know it. I'm turning into Mike Peeker.
Tyler, you kind of like changed my mind on this over the last few years. Because I went down the rabbit trail, a rabbit hole after I missed a deer pretty much because of a mechanical in 2018 and decided I was going to like try to do the whole heavy arrow, tiny little paper cut, and
TLPC.
Had some bad experiences with that too, and then figured out, you know what? Sometimes just the less than optimal happens when you release an arrow.
It does. Because mm-hmm. guess what happened in South Dakota this year when I released an arrow?
Mm-hmm.
Mechanical. You know, I don't know. There's going to be dudes for sure that comment on this video when they see it and say, if I'd have been shooting a 600 grain arrow or whatever and iron wheel solid, mm-hmm. that I would have pushed through it. I can't tell you I wouldn't have, but this was a hard, hard dude, spot on the body of a deer. Big deer.
I don't think you'd have killed him if you went pushed through right there.
Yeah, I mean, it might have missed vital stuff.
There wasn't much vital behind yeah. that. I mean, I'm not cracking on you.
No.
You know, y'all will see in the video, there's a whole big thing on this, but Tyler doesn't end up putting the arrow where he would like to. And
For sure.
Shoot a mechanical. But then
that's a nice way of saying
5 days later or something like that, I shoot a mechanical and kill one dead as a doornail, you know.
Very close spot to where I shot mine, you know.
Yeah, so. Very close. We talked about that a while ago because we were looking at this footage, and, like, I was just a few inches over from where
it sounded like you shot empty milk jugs. It was so, like, slick through there,
oh,
man.
I love it. I mean, it makes me so happy.
It was wild.
Yeah.
So, mechanicals yeah. for life.
Yeah. Nice.
This is a Tyler Jones special right
no,
here.
No, this is what Michael said.
No, this is Tyler Jones. Trapping is cruel.
Oh,
fact
really?
Or fiction?
KC, I don't have much. I don't have a whole lot of thoughts on this. I don't ever think about this because I've never been a trapper.
Fact.
Ooh.
Trapping is cruel, but the wild is cruel.
That's right.
There's no such thing as a peaceful death in the wild. Even when things lay down and freeze to death, it's probably not very enjoyable. So it's just participating
I've
in the way things work.
Freeze to death.
Me
death
too.
In a tree.
I missed you going this year, dude. I'm about frozen to death. So there might not be people liking me to say that, but absolutely. But instead of trying to defend a position that is like very refutable, just like admit to the facts of the wild, you know, like everything. There's no – like, cruelty, at the same time, I could go philosophical and say cruelty doesn't exist because there's no such thing as, like, that. I don't. There's a line in Ecclesiastes that says that, you know, life is vapor, right? It doesn't matter. It's just the way it goes. So
interesting.
That's what I have to say about that.
People are a lot more sensitive right now and a lot more, like – I feel like this is a broad statement, but I feel like a lot of people are a lot more have distanced themselves, or we as culture maybe have distanced ourselves from the facts, period, right? But mm-hmm. the fact that like death is something that happens, mm-hmm. and then you have to live with it and you have to deal with it. It's coming on earth, and then you have to deal with it in actual death.
Mm-hmm.
And people just want to ignore that and have kind of some escapism from that, which is fine. I understand. And I do it at times too. But, like, if you think about even just 150 years ago in the 1870s, cowboys, like, just were, like, almost glad to die sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, they would, you know, I mean, it's the whole thing that we talked about on the Meteor podcast briefly about Davy Crockett, right? Mm-hmm. It's like this whole thing where it's like glory. It's like a sort of glory to die for a good cause. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I think we're in a very weird time where people are just don't understand that that's a thing that'll happen and that it's not really a comfortable thing ever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like in the past, people have known. I mean, you can go, like going back to the biblical stuff, you know, like people. Death was just perceived differently in even modern culture back then. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just kings just killed people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, fact or fiction?
Fact.
Yeah.
Trapping is cruel, I think. But, you know, I guess you could use a live trap and take it somewhere, but you're still annoying the animal.
You're stressing it out.
Yeah.
So, to give a little backstory, by the way, so that y'all know that my opinion is somewhat vetted. I was a county trapper for 2 years and spent a lot of time trapping coyotes, hogs, bobcats, nutria rats, all that stuff. So I've been around it some, not just speaking from a, you know, from an outsider's point of view on my stuff. Greg?
Yeah, I think it's fact. Trapping's cruel, but nature's cruel. And I think people have a false idea of what a death in nature looks like.
Mm-hmm.
This thing, an animal just falls asleep next to a creek, mm-hmm. peacefully, and dies in their
turns
sleep.
Turns into a flower.
I know. They usually get eaten alive.
Yep.
From the back
from
end.
From the backside.
Mm-hmm.
So, trapping's cruel, but it's just a thing.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think it's a little weird when people take, like, photos with, like, a trapped animal. It's
yeah.
kind of weird.
That's kind of weird to me, too.
I mean, I don't have anything against it, but I just think it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on FishingBooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
The first bobcat I caught in a foot trap, I for sure took a picture because it was like a big accomplishment for me, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not like something I posted for the whole world to see.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's some level of this stuff where it's like, you know, we don't have to go find the nearest ASPCA or whatever it is and go talk to them about how what we think about trapping at their location. But, you know, amongst people who spend some time out in the wild, it's okay to, like, you know, be frank about this stuff for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Michael?
I agree with everything. The trapping is cool, but life's cruel. I mean, we literally were riding the ATV yesterday and just saw a pig face down in the creek.
Just dead.
Just dead.
No explanation. Yeah, no explanation. Just a dead banded hog, like, you know, white black hog. So I don't know where it came from.
Did y'all see any live hogs?
No.
Not a single one.
Bunch of sign though. Saw a big old cow. Yeah, moo cow.
That'd have been a tasty animal.
It was. It was. I thought it was a steer when I first saw it, and it's kind of looked like it, but it was a like a heifer, like a young, tasty.
All I heard was KC say, "That's a good way to get shot." And I look up and there's a cow.
Well, it's just a black one, kind of. You know, like it just looked like a hog in the first reaction. You know, but yeah. Like
there's not supposed to be.
Cows yeah, not supposed there. To be yeah. cows there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Next.
Okay. Next. Trophy hunting is the wrong way.
The wrong
to
way
to hunt.
So hunting for a trophy is
you should only hunt for meat.
Oh,
is wrong.
Who's first?
Greg.
I'll go. like shoot whatever makes you happy, but like I'll trophy hunt if it keeps me out in the woods longer and like. I mean, they're the hardest animal to kill out there. Mm-hmm. Like, people think trophy hunting is just like you go hunting and you shoot the biggest one, but it's really hard to find the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of times means you don't kill anything. So,
I wonder if those people hate pumpkin contests.
The biggest pumpkin.
Yeah, it's like these people planted some pumpkins and then had a big one and mm-hmm. made a contest. Like, is that a, I don't know. They small. Don't. That's the answer. Most of them probably. I'm sure somebody has a problem with it, but like yeah. they don't because the different animation.
Trophy hunting is the wrong way is fiction. I have two anecdotes. First off, if Cherokee Indian was here instead of me and he saw a buck that had antlers, and he saw a doe that didn't. I bet that dude's going to shoot the antlered critter because he's thinking he can make tools out of that.
Yeah, it's more useful.
Yeah, it's a more useful animal.
And bigger it's usually skin, more meat, too.
More meat, bigger skin, all that. And so that was kind of the next thing that kind of transitions even into me. A lot of times the trophies are also the bigger-bodied critters, so you have more tasties. And, you know, it's also just pretty fun to challenge yourself. And, you know, if you went out behind Tyler's house here on any given day, you could probably tag out on does pretty quick. But if you want to shoot a big giant buck like he has on the wall right here, that he would probably have to wait a little bit mm-hmm. on that, huh?
Yeah, I had to wait a lot. You know, it's it's fiction for me too, because of the kind of reverence that I have for that animal and the rarity of it. Birders love seeing the green jay.
Let's go.
You know what I mean? They love seeing those things. And so do I. I love seeing a green jay. I've seen one. It was sweet. And I love seeing big bucks because guess what? At some point, a certain size of buck, I have only seen once or twice. You know what I mean? So when I see it again, it's awesome. And if I get to shoot that thing and put it on my wall and see it every day, that's cool too. I like that. So, I mean, I don't need to go on and on about it, but similar feelings.
Yeah, we all hang out way too much. We're all going to agree on every yeah, single
Michael
one.
Michael needs to go first here soon.
Yeah, for sure. Next one you're going
he
first.
He gets going last, so.
All right. Catch and release allows fish to live and reproduce. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's science to show that a lot of the fish that get hooked are not making it out of there. Like, they are getting messed up when you sit there and you try to take the hook out and you can't get it out, and you got your fingers all up in the gills, and then you try to get it back and it just kind of swims away sideways. Like, I think that thing's dead almost, I would say, more than 50% of the time. People are killing the fish even if they don't know it. And maybe it makes people feel better about whatever, but I think they're dying.
I think it depends on what kind of fish, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've caught the same bass like 3-4 times in a little creek because I you know, memorized a marking on it. But he'd do just fine if I kept releasing them. But I think other fish are more finicky and might have a tougher time. Seems like there's a sea trout where... A little finicky.
Yeah. Thing we ate.
Yeah,
like, they don't like to be out of the water.
It's pretty easy to kind of correlate where it's like the soft scaled fish mm-hmm. are usually kind of tender.
Mm-hmm. Shad, trout.
Yeah, shad was the thing I was going to say. People yep. think about game fish, but shad, dude, if you touch them, they're dead.
Oh, yeah.
They're dead. The only caveat to that would be catfish, which they don't have scales, right? Catfish are tough.
Dude, them things are weird. They are weird, dude.
Yeah. So I'm with y'all that it is fiction, and I think that you were talking about high horses a while ago. Catch and release angling is about as high as horses get.
Yeah. You know what's the only higher horse? Keep them wet.
Oh, I was going there. Which there's something to it.
Sure, but dude, you're still handling the fish. He's still super stressed.
Sooner or later, we should just scuba dive and take pictures of him in the water.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of dudes out there that are keeping them wet, but their gills aren't wet. Mm-hmm. It's just parts of their body. Mm-hmm. And it's like taking pictures with them, but their gills are out of the water. It's like, dude, I know that his like anal fin is in the water, but mm-hmm. that's not doing anything for him, mm-hmm. okay? So, I mean... Get off the high horse. Here's a quick little bit here from this is Louisiana Fisheries article done with LSU and Sea Grant from Louisiana. In the month of August, Texas Parks and Wildlife conducted a release mortality study on largemouth bass in a private lake in Texas. Each team fished until it had 30 bass over 14 inches. Hooking location was recorded before they were tagged and placed in boats and live wells. Held in boat live wells no longer than 15 minutes. They were transferred to a 20-foot deep floating nylon mesh cage. There, the fish were held for 72 hours before release. At the end of 72 hours, 22% of the bass had died. The death rate was no higher for the fish caught on live bait than those for on artificial baits. On the first trip, mortality was 13% for live bait compared to 23% for artificial. On the second trip, 28% and 23%. And, it goes on.
Wait, did that just say that mortality was higher on artificial than live?
The second trip, it was higher on live.
Okay, so there's no conclusive evidence there.
Yeah, it's...
But the common, I guess you would say, like the thing said often is that live bait fishermen hook fish deep and kill them.
Yep.
And that would show that there's really
19% or 19 fish were bleeding when they were caught. 47% of those died.
Mm, so if it's bleeding, it's a good chance it's toast.
Yep. 50% in the gill, 48% in the throat.
I'm surprised it's that low. I feel like gill damage is like for sure. And that's like the short term.
Also, these are bass, dude. They're pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty tough. They got a big old hard mouth, too.
Yeah.
So
that's the other thing that a lot of this isn't taken into consideration is like how does the catching of the fish affect its ability to feed?
Mm-hmm.
How does the handling of the fish affect the slime that then protects the fish long term from infection?
Yeah, 2 weeks later they get an infection, mm-hmm. Or a fungus. There's it's definitely worth keeping some fish and eating them, I think. Mm-hmm. Especially as good as they taste, right?
Yeah.
So,
all right, hit us with a good one. Last one. What's it going to be?
Oh, there's two more. We got to do them.
We got to do
them. Let's go.
I think these last two.
Right? Okay. Poachers should lose their hunting license.
Ooh, we should have put the headphones on the other day for this. For sure.
What's a poacher?
Oh,
it's a good question.
Let's go, Greg. Let's go.
Like,
a person who breaks the law.
A person who illegally takes game, I would imagine.
So
actually, maybe not even.
Yeah, what if you're spotlight magician shot anything?
You're a poacher.
Well, is it illegal to do that?
Look at your statement.
A person who hunts or catches game or fish illegally is Oxford Dictionary.
So definition. Hunting illegally, not killing, but hunting.
Or catching game.
Yeah. So or if you go on somebody else's property, are you trespassing or poaching?
Trespassing.
And poaching.
Well,
because you're hunting game illegally.
If you hunt, you're hunting, right? You're poaching.
Sorry,
yeah.
So hunting and poaching?
Yeah. Greg, should they lose their hunt license?
No. I think many people could be considered poachers in the hunting world.
That's right.
Especially in Texas.
I think
it's not a lot of fun to fall into a category accidentally and then have lifelong repercussions of it, is there?
Yeah. I think if it's a reoccurring, like a recidivism, like they're...
Oh, whoa.
Let's go.
Well, I don't know that.
Greg is a smart guy.
That's
man.
A good one.
They keep...
College educated.
You know, a trend of...
Educated.
You know, breaking the law and... Mm. Taking game and they just don't have any regard for the law, then yeah, you lose your hunting license. Mm-hmm. But if you break a hunting law and you didn't mean to, I don't think you should lose your hunting license.
Yeah.
Or if you don't get two wheels off the highway.
Yeah.
What role does civil disobedience have in wildlife conservation?
This is careful, Greg. Careful deep. Right here.
And I'm not accusing you of this. This is just
civil disobedience. What do you mean by that?
I mean, when, and this is probably for the aggregate here, when do we say, you know what, as a conservation biology-minded partaker in the outdoors, when do we say, you know what, I don't agree with that. And I think that it is a decision made ignorantly, and I'm not going to worry about it.
When you are willing to get your license taken away, which, I mean, you can keep hunting without a license, certainly, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're just going to get a ticket every time or thrown in jail every time you get caught hunting without a license. But I think that's the thing is, like, it's hard because originally a lot of the stuff originally was intended with or had good intentions when it started, right? And and you know, maybe Theodore Roosevelt saw different things disappearing on the landscape that he wanted to put in some sort of conservation model to try to mitigate those things disappearing. And everybody's faulted, right? Everybody that's walked there except for one. And I think that even with good intentions, there are selfish ambitions within everybody, and I think that those can taint things. And so you have to definitely, you can definitely take things in your own hands, but I feel like that the hardest part of being like, that's a stupid rule, is that everybody else, if everybody else doesn't think that rules matter, then all of a sudden we are back into the buffalo issue where we don't have any game in America anymore. So that's the hardest part of the thing, because I'm with you, I guess, or with whoever wants to say, like, some
I'm
of these rules are
there
dumb.
Yet, but.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes you're like, man, this is a dumb rule. Why is this the case? Why do they get to tell me, you know, I can't shoot deer when they're eating the flowers out of my rose garden or whatever? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, in the case of some of the places, like, locally for us, I know, like, there's dudes that hunt around golf courses. You know, they may be even a couple of miles from a golf course, and the deer are overpopulated to the point where they are eating the people who live on the golf course's landscape. And so those people are complaining to the state. Now the state comes in and brings sharpshooters in that shoot 170 deer in a night or two and can't do anything with them. Because of legalities, instead of letting these people around them, hey, here's some tags for you this year. Why don't you shoot some does and let's do something with these deer?
Rules for thee and not for me. That's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you probably are a little more familiar with this kind of stuff, but in professional sports, you have a governing body like the NBA, the NFL, or whatever, and there are players' associations that are kind of the like the anecdote to that, right? Or however you want to say it, mm-hmm. like they answer. It's like the
antidote.
NFL. Antidote?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. Yes, those are two different words, aren't
they? We've said anecdote a few times, yeah. So he's probably in your mind. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So they are willing to stand up as a collective body and say, no, we aren't going to stand for this. It would be nice in the hunting world if we had something like that, and there probably are some people that are saying there are places like that.
SCI.
I haven't found one that I really, really like.
Sure.
And maybe that's the nature of what we do. You have a lot of loners, a lot of people who see things differently.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, that's for sure a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talk about it a lot. Ethics are made up, and there's a lot of dudes out there that want to project their ethics onto you about mm-hmm. shooting a turkey when it's only been fooled by one decoy and it's sitting, you know, dead still and it's got its head halfway up or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's hard. It is hard because some people. You know, Cajuns think they should be able to just drive by and shoot geese off the side of the road and take them, put them in a pot and eat them because that's what they do with geese. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And then there's every facet in between that and the person who thinks that a goose is one of their brothers, you know, that was mm-hmm. Created long ago or whatever. So, you know, it's weird.
But. Yeah. I needed to say fact or fiction on that, didn't I? Fiction.
Fiction.
Fiction for sure. I think there's so many ticky-tack laws. Like, in your home state, you should know your laws. But, like, what we do, we go to so many states, it's very difficult, and it takes a lot of work to be able to understand what mm-hmm. each state, like, what laws are in Nebraska compared to South Dakota. And they are literally touching borders, like they are the same state, same type of country.
Might be hunting miles away from where you just were,
literally.
Yeah, but in this other state, now this is something we have corrected and talked to a game warden about. Yada yada. In one state, you have to put your hunting license number on the trail camera that you deploy. I've never hunted a state like that in my life, mm-hmm. or I have, but didn't know that.
And the only reason you know that is because you have a friend who is a game warden.
Yeah, exactly. He told us. And then ever since then, no problem, man. You know, we'll do it. So, you know, it's just like little things like that are going to catch you sooner or later.
Yeah. I don't know, man. We're just out there trying to have fun, shoot some things.
That's right.
And speaking of ethics, Michael.
Is the frontal ethical?
He's staying away from the other two.
Yeah. I'm going to stay away from the other two also.
The little Texas heart shot? You don't want to ask that one too?
No. Nope. With what weapon? Say bow.
Tyler?
What is ethical?
Oh, my goodness.
It's a good question.
Okay.
Is it effective? Let's say it.
It's effective.
It's definitely
frontal,
effective.
What's the statement? Frontal is not ethical?
Yes.
Unethical.
Fiction.
Frontal is unethical, unethical, and you say fiction. A frontal is ethical.
Yes.
Okay.
Then my ethics are not your ethics.
But they're pretty close.
They typically are. But, you know, for the person listening.
Yeah.
Frontal is ethical. I have seen some frontal shots. I actually filmed a frontal shot that was as devastating as just about any bow shot I've seen.
Oklahoma?
And I think that...
Smokelahoma.
In fact, that was definitely Smokelahoma. And I, in fact, think that the frontal may be the most effective, especially within a effective range.
What?
You don't want to get
too
far. So
this is where, like, telling somebody they're right or wrong because they can't shoot a certain distance or whatever, it gets tough. So, Tyler, tell me this. How far on a whitetail-sized animal do you feel good about shooting a frontal?
The issue is whitetail range from, like, 85 pounds to, like, 285.
On a Midwestern whitetail.
Ooh. So that's the issue. Oh, and on Midwestern whitetail, you're going to have, you know, a deer that's probably not as jumpy as some of the ones around here.
Definitely not.
And also is bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say depending on how much I've been shooting, which usually means earlier in the season, the better, I would not probably be afraid to shoot close to 30 on a big frontal buck.
What about Texas?
On a Texas deer, dude, 20 is probably about
the
max. A
lot of factors in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The good thing about a frontal on a Texas deer is when it jumps the string, you got a lot of things to hit still. When it jumps the string at 20 on a broadside shot, you have a slim margin of error there. And you better hope that it doesn't go in the neck V there, you know.
Yeah, I would say that frontal is not ethical is fiction for a couple reasons. I agree with Tyler. The frontal actually has some steep margins on it. So, like, you go from killing to missing pretty quick. Left and right,
that's a good
for
point.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Up and down, absolutely. You got brain all the way down to heart.
Let's
you know?
Go, dude.
And so, like, there's – and you can miss left or right a little bit, and there's always something that can happen, you know, yada, yada. But I think it's a lot more ethical, and it's the most effective when orchestrated correctly. I'll tell you all this. You probably have learned. I push the limits. We were in – a state north of here this past year, early in deer season, and I was fully prepared to shoot 60 yards at a deer on a frontal, and I would do it again.
I don't think I'd shoot that far.
I don't blame you. You just shot 60 yards for the first time the other day.
It's true. I think a lot of it is how good you are with your weapon. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are really confident in shooting that, shoot it, because if you hit it in the right place, it will die very quickly, mm-hmm. and might be the most ethical, mm-hmm. if you want to talk ethics. So, yeah, frontal is not ethical, is fiction for sure.
I mean, like, the frontal is usually a close shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, a frontal is definitely ethical, and maybe not at 100 yards, but, I mean... If you think you can kill it, kill it.
Yeah.
I mean.
Is killing it ethical?
That's a question.
We don't need to
get
into
that.
Man,
what a question. What a question.
It's almost like ethics are subjective.
Almost.
It's almost as if they're dependent on your worldview, on your life experiences.
Mm.
Wow. What a time to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Guys, I think the thing to remember throughout all this is that these are opinions that we are expressing. And you also have an opinion, and that's good. And constructive discourse about this stuff is always helpful. If you can learn something from somebody else, it's good. It's probably why you're listening to podcasts, to tell you the truth.
Let me ask you something real quick.
All right,
is it constructive to be sarcastic when you're talking with people online and criticizing or having discourse?
No, because it's real hard to tell someone's tone.
So don't use sarcasm. Is that what you're saying? So don't say, oh, smart guy there, or something like that, right?
What if he really means it?
I'm just saying sarcasm gets used way too much, and it's not a good look.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So discourse is good. Don't tear anybody down too far because, you know, they might not have anybody in their life that can pick them up too much. So.
This got deep.
That's right, dude. That's how we like to roll around here. And then crack jokes real quick to kind of lift us up out of it. That's how we roll, man. So remember, we're all hunters. There is a point, however, where you don't stand behind somebody because they are getting shots fired at them and you don't want to get shot either, right? if you're – I won't give examples. But there's no like – dead cold hands when it comes to this stuff. It all has a lot of variation, a lot of things that are subjective, but the more we talk about stuff, hard issues, things that we encounter in the woods, the more we'll have a better concept of how everybody looks at this stuff, and we will all be better hunters together. So remember that, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot
all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.